And welcome back to the Just Go Up Climbing Podcast. I'm your host, Finn. This week, I have a guest, Matt from Backseat Climbing.
Hello.
Matt, you're from Sheffield in the UK. You climb a lot with Ben Moon, and obviously you host a podcast. Oh, and you talk a lot of
Yeah, I wouldn't say I climb a lot with Ben, but I did work for him for a bit, and I see him at the school. But, I do talk a lot of shit, to be fair. We did get cancelled in, like, 4 episodes of our podcast, which must be a record, especially for climbing podcasts. Yeah, no, Sheffield-based. I'm just keen climber, I suppose. It's nice out here. Our weather's temperate at best, but... You know, living in Sheffield, I suppose, like, it's weird. I think explaining to people that don't live in Sheffield or, I guess, like, climbing hubs, they don't quite understand that like, how exposed you are to, like, the latest in climbing and all of these kind of, like, bigger climbing names. I suppose it becomes quite normalised when you see, like, really good climbers at the Crag or, like, previously really good climbers, quite famous people at the Crag. It becomes quite normalized when you live here, and then you speak to people about it and they're like, oh, that's kind of mad. I remember I was in Switzerland in Magic Wood, and I told this guy, like, oh yeah, I had met Bozy a few times, and he, like, couldn't believe it. And I was like, he's really not that interesting in person.
Yeah, I mean, I think we were talking, like, beforehand about going out to the Crag. This, you know, you were just out earlier today and I got back last night, and, like, my perspective is I think the strongest person I've ever climbed with has, like, proposed V14. So it's just kind of interesting, you know, the geographical differences and, like, who you'll run into.
I think it's just the density, because we don't have that much rock, and, like, everybody gets sort of funneled into the same places, especially within, like, the Peak District. The UK just isn't that big. Like, you do get to meet quite a lot of people, and also, like, the social scene in Sheffield lends itself to it quite handsomely. Like, there's a big, like, event every year where one of the climbing centers, like, basically rents out a nightclub, and there's just, like, a massive, like, rave that happens, and, like, loads of climbers go. Like, Aiden went a couple years ago and stuff, so it's pretty cool.
No, that's cool that it's, I guess, so community centered it's kind of strange in the US, at least from what I've experienced, because it's like climbing's just sort of like an activity that you do, and there's maybe not so many people relative to the general climbing population who are super serious about it. And I guess being from Sheffield is going to make a big difference, right? Because it's kind of like such a big population of people who are really committed relative to, like, the population of the town.
Yeah, I think the thing about Sheffield, and I say this quite a lot, like, Sheffield isn't really the place with the best, like, rock in the UK. Mm-hmm. It doesn't even have, like, the exposure to the most hard climbing even. But the thing that it does really well is, like, if you want to get strong and you want to train and you're serious about climbing, like, the number of other people that are like that is, like, so high. And yeah, the facilities available for that are so good that, like, in order to, like, become a better climber, be really good, like, living here is, like, by far the best place to do so. Yeah. At least in Britain. I think if you speak to, like, nearly any of, like, the really good climbers that have, you know, lived in the UK or come out of the UK, like, at some point their lives would have revolved around living in Sheffield.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the US has sort of had that in the past, right? Where it's been, like, the epicenter of climbing is, like, Boulder, Colorado, and now it's sort of Salt Lake City. And I mean, I'd assume that Boulder and Salt Lake maybe have slightly better access to better climbing than Sheffield, but you're not necessarily just moving there for, like, the rock. You're moving there because that's where, like, everyone else who's really strong is moving to.
Yeah. It is interesting, though, because I think, like, there's a lot of really good climbers in London, and I think a lot of the comp stuff is going further north to Leeds just because their facilities are slightly better. Like, a lot of the Team GB guys now live up in Leeds. So it is diversifying a bit, but I think in terms of rock climbing at the moment, like, Sheffield is, like, definitely the place to be with it. There's, like, a huge amount of people to train with. I like going to the schoolroom and stuff, like, having that bit of, like, kind of history and that facility to train at is, like, kind of gives you, like, this unlimited way of improving. Like, I think fundamentally living in Sheffield, you'll never be the best climber at your gym. Like, you just won't. Having that kind of, like, unlimited ceiling on things is quite nice.
Yeah, I think I've heard it called, like, fishbowl theory or whatever, where it's like, if you're in this fish tank with a bunch of people who are, like, really psyched and can pull really hard and just show you how high the limit is, it's gonna be so much easier to, like, push yourself. Whereas if you're, like, kind of in a smaller fishbowl and you're, like, one of the strongest people there, it's going to be a little harder to, like, push those limits.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's funny. Like, you get people that move here from, like, smaller towns and smaller places, and they'll be here for like a few months and they'll come in like quite confident, you know, that they're good. And then like you can slowly see them like ego getting shattered as like you come into contact with more and more people. And there's loads of people like you will have never heard of and they've climbed like V13 and it's like, oh, I just like you realize like truly how big the ceiling is in climbing. It is quite interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I guess with the ego thing, I feel like that's pretty good for climbing culture as a whole, right? You know, I'm kind of in like a farther flung part of the US. I've seen a couple people get like big egos because they're bouldering V9 or whatever.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they go outside of the state and they kind of get crushed. But I feel like it's good. Yeah. I feel like when you kind of get humbled like that, you're able to like contribute better as a climber and just have a better climbing experience.
Yeah, I agree. I suppose we're from quite like opposite social backgrounds in regards to climbing, where I've got a little abundance of rock and especially a little abundance of undeveloped rock, but like loads of people that are like keen to do so. Whereas like I assume in Alaska, you kind of have like the reverse flip side.
Yeah, no, you know, we were talking right before the podcast about, you know, how getting out and whatever, and I was down in this area south, like 5 hours south of me, and my estimate for that area for the potential is like 500,000 boulder problems within 2 hours of the road. So, and it's all like pretty solid granite, like just okay quality to like, I think some of the best boulder problems in the world that I've ever climbed on are up there. But then, like, on the other hand, Alaska got its first commercial, like, standardized board last year, this past winter.
Yeah.
I've, like, traveled specifically to go climb on boards, like, out of state, which is, yeah, definitely, like, a complete opposite experience.
Yeah.
But I think it's cool. And I, like, me personally, I'm very psyched on developing and scrubbing boulders and wandering through the woods and that sort of thing. So it kind of works out.
Yeah. It is interesting because, like, I feel like that's something that where... Unless you're in Scotland and like maybe Northumberland, but not really. I think like having undeveloped rock, like especially undeveloped good boulders, just like doesn't really exist in this country. Basically, everything that's been looked at has been either done or just like ridiculously hard or terrible. So there's like just not that much about to do. And I think because of that, you get so much that's been developed and done where like most of the limestone in the Peak District just like wouldn't have ever been done like in other places in the world just because of like how many climbers there are here and like how little good like truly good rock there is that's like often dry.
Yeah,
500,000 boulders like that haven't been done, like, pretty yeah hell.
It's like impossible for me to like really develop an estimate. Like you've seen photos of like Lincoln Lake and whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like it is just like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of square miles of just that. And some of it's just kind of like smaller talus. Like you might not be able to make blocks out of it. You know, the big stuff's gonna be like 6 feet tall, but then there's also like houses. I definitely, you know, I try and spray as much as I can about it to like maybe get people up here, but obviously it's hard to do. We might, there's kind of like, you know, rumors of maybe like Mad Rock sending someone up maybe next year or something. I don't want to spray too much about it, but to see what can be done. Because there's, well, allegedly there's a V14 up here now, but I don't know if I quite buy it yet.
Yeah, it kind of does take that sometimes. Just like that one, like really, really hard boulder to like attract people and then like kind of what's happening in Finland, I think, at the moment. Like when people have gone to Burn the Dreams, they've realized like, oh, there's like a lot to be done here. Like we saw people repeating the Globalist, which that didn't really get done that much. And then obviously Nikki Cherrier went and he did that lawyer project thing that's probably like 8C+, and like Aiden and stuff did it in a few more boulders. And I think it's even people going now, like Austin Hoyt, I think, went, and he went, like, kind of with the intention to have a look at Burden, but he did, like, went just on a climbing trip there. So I think these things do happen. It just kind of needs that one, like, catalyst boulder to get people over there.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, maybe on the Finland point, let's, like, jump in to the climbing videos this week. I think the first one I wanted to talk about was Lee Sung-soo, obviously went and did Burden, arguably twice. I think he did it twice, but there was a full video released last week about just his trip to Finland and everything surrounding that. And I thought it was pretty sick. I mean, we'd seen the footage of him sending Burden already, but it was kind of crazy to get the context of, like, after he thought he did Burden, he, like, I don't know if he did like 8B plus or 8B that day, but he was definitely working like multiple very hard boulders, and kind of like wrecked his skin and then went back 2 days later to do burden again.
Yeah, I think he did that I can't remember what it is. And I know he did the Globalist after it, and then he did that elephant one. I can't remember what it was called, but he did both of them. But what I didn't realize was he went out straight after he did it, he kind of had an inkling that he dabbed, and he looked to like those four camera angles, which is kind of mad.
He didn't think he dabbed, but then there was one particular angle. I mean, he definitely like touched down on the pads. I feel like if he had taken that, they're definitely like I'd definitely be like, "Oh, you dabbed on Burton." But I feel like because he went back and he did it, and he did it like very quickly on his next session, it's kind of like, yeah, you definitely did Burden twice.
Yeah, I think I really like Lee Sung Soo. I think he's like a really cool guy that doesn't like look for too much attention. I also find him quite funny. Like as soon as he did Burden, he like cracked open a beer. I think he is like a bit of like a Korean Zach Gala type. But I think a lot of the time, like professional climbers just get caught up with just, do the boulder, make the post, upload the video, and then it's done. And I really respect Lee Sung Soo for like having the confidence to come out and be like, I wanted to do this like for a good style. And I think it was nice that, he didn't really, I get the impression he didn't really do it for just like other people. He himself like felt like he didn't do it, and he felt like he dabbed. And to go back and do that, like I think like having that respect for style is something that has sort of been lacking recently in like global climbing. And it's really cool to see somebody like with the self-respect, I suppose, to go back and like give it another shot.
And I mean, to just have the confidence that you can, if four camera angles looked like he didn't dab, he could have just picked one of those angles to release the footy, right? And I guess to just like, maybe he didn't go back with like the confidence that he could do it again. Like, you don't necessarily have to, but like, he just was like, I haven't done it. Like, I need to do it. I guess to say that he did have the confidence, he was like, yeah, I can do it again. Like, it didn't seem like he was like super shook up about it. He was just like, nope, it needs to get done. And then also to like, I mean, he did, at least on the second day that he did the true burden send, he did 27, was it 27 club? And then he also went and did that, was it the 8B plus or the 8B he did that day? I can't remember. He did a lot of hard boulders in like 2 days.
He is very, very good. Like I think as well, something that potentially people don't realize is like when you are so capable, I think as a professional climber, like your form is very consistent, like very, very consistent. I think it's kind of no surprise that he went back and was able to do it. I think it's cool that it's so at its top end to do like repeat it like that. But like it kind of doesn't surprise me he was able to repeat it so much. I think a lot of the previous burden ascensionists probably could have repeated it within like another session or two. Like from the go they sent it, like they are pretty consistent unless you're ill or your skin's terrible or something.
I don't know for sure that I like walked past him. I was in Bishop for a few days this winter. Was it this winter or the winter before that he did?
So I
I
think it
think he
was
did
last winter.
last winter he did the, was it the process or Lucid? I
Yeah, he
can't
did
remember.
Process and Lucid, he did
He did
both.
process and Lucid. Anyway, I think he was there doing some filming, but I definitely like agree, at least with the content I've seen of him, it's like very chill. Yeah, like he doesn't seem to have that an ego, and it's just like he's doing it for, to climb a bunch of really good and hard boulder problems.
He kind of came out of nowhere as well. Like I remember, like last year, he went to Rocklands and he did the finish line and like Monkey Wedding and stuff. And I had never really heard of him before that. And like he turned up with Gala and he was just doing all these hard boulders. And then like a year later, he's done like the hardest boulder in the world. I think it's like very impressive to see his like form. And I'm sure he'll go on to do something really cool. Maybe do something really hard in Korea or Japan would be quite interesting. I don't know if he lives in America though, maybe, but that would be cool.
Yeah, like you said, like I don't know, didn't know that much about him until like he popped up in the past year or two, and I still kind of don't know what his deal is.
He is just really cool. Like I just think he's got loads of aura. Like he is just like a cool guy. I think that he's like very marketable. That's why anti-grav have jumped on him so quickly.
Yeah, that was a good grab by Keenan, no kidding. I was just gonna go back to what you said about like doing an FA. Like I've heard people talking about like kind of these people going and repeating the hardest things in the world and not seeing. Maybe it seems like there's just a few people doing like those top level FAs right now. you know, Aiden is, and Sean and whatever, where it's like you've got multiple 9A FAs under your belt and like wanting to see like more diversity in that. I think I heard someone like talking about Yanya going to try Burden and being like, it'd be really cool to see Yanya do Burden, but it'd also be really cool to see Yanya like do a 8C plus or a 9A FA and like propose that. And I think it would also be super cool to see, you know, Sungsu do, you know, a 9A or an... Are there like 3 8C pluses in Japan that I can think of off the top of my head? I can't. I'm sure there's more.
There but... might be 4, I think. There was a new one recently. It's like that. I think there's 4, but
yeah.
There, I think there's a lot. I think it's interesting though with him that he's from like a country previously quite dominated by competition climbers and moonboarders. So it would be quite cool. Like, I don't really know anything Korean climbing. If there's good rock there or something, but you know, like he could develop and like have like a new like part of the world open up. I'm sure there's stuff to do there, so it would be pretty cool if he was able to, you know, do some development there or maybe do some more in Japan and whatnot. Just like kind of open up like a different part of the world.
Yeah, Korea is quite mountainous. I would think there's like a fair bit of rock, and I've seen like Hoseok Lee post videos and whatever, but I also don't know anything really about their specific climbing scene.
Yeah, I don't know. I just get the impression there might be. I think the interesting thing I find with like these top level climbers though is like there are like known projects about that wouldn't be like there's that one between Spectre and Devolution or Spectre and Lucid that's supposedly like 9A plus or like ridiculously hard that's been known about for like years and years. Yeah, I don't know if it's just really sharp or really difficult or something, but like it does surprise me that nobody has hopped on these like really hard like known projects yet.
Well, I mean, I know at least specifically for that Bishop one, I saw at least one person trying it on my most recent Bishop trip. I can't remember who. I don't think I recognized him. I've seen, I think in the background of the Devolution video, you can see like Keenan pulling on it. I mean, maybe it's that people are trying them and they're just really fucking hard. Not to swear. I'll bleep that. But yeah, maybe 9A plus really is just that hard, you know? Which
I imagine so. But like, I think... like that there's just very few people that can climb 9A plus in like certain styles. I think like of the 9A ascensionists, I'd say like about half of them are genuinely in a position at the moment to put up a 9A plus.
Yeah,
because a lot of people have either just done one or absolutely sieged one.
Right.
And like I think like Aiden's thing in Yosemite is probably going to be 9A plus. That thing looks ridiculous.
Is that like, I mean, 6 degrees or something?
It's the 6 degrees project. It looks absurdly hard.
Yeah.
And now he's moved there. I think we'll probably end up doing that. And hopefully, like that'd be 9A plus. That'd be cool. And then because he was going to give his thing, there was talk of him maybe giving his thing in Switzerland, the Midnight Project, Arrival of the Birds thing, 9A plus. But he didn't end up doing that. But I think that thing is like mega 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 hard, so that'd be interesting.
Are there pictures like out of the 6 degrees project yet? I've heard them talk about it on Careless Talk a fair bit, but I don't know if I've like seen it.
There's a video, it's just like locked behind their Patreon. Of him. I think he does both of the crux moves in it, and it looks mad. It looks really cool as well, properly like incredible boulder. I think it is cool that he's moved out there to like push it to like the next level. And a lot of people say Yosemite Granite's maybe some of the best around. So it's cool that Yosemite once again is at like the forefront of hard climbing.
Yeah. I mean, it's sick that, you know, it got its first 16, but it's also like, you know, I feel like Yosemite is kind of in that same position that maybe, you know, I've experienced up here in Alaska, but I feel like it's still kind of common across like the Western United States where there's a lot of really popular boulders and a lot of like the obvious like and relatively accessible lines have been done, but there's just so much rock out here that, you know, there's still like these amazing lines that are, you know, not really that hard to get to that just haven't really been explored yet. So I would bet there's still, you know, a ton of potential in Yosemite.
Yeah, no doubt. I am slightly disappointed that Aiden has moved to America though. It, like we have now lost. Well, Hamish may move, and then we've lost two of our best boulderers. So it is a bit disappointing. But you know what? He did a lot in the UK. Like he kind of did push us into like a new era, which is quite nice. But I know, I guess, you know, Jim Pope said this about him to me the other day. It's like, when your goal in climbing is to do good hard boulders, that doesn't really exist in the UK. Like, you kind of have to go elsewhere. Yeah. And to go to America, you know, and do these. And I think the good thing is about America is it's like, we're going to get content out of it as well. Like, there's plenty of people that can take photos and film him, which is quite nice as well.
Yeah. Aiden's, he seems like a guy who's very interested in climbing good lines in general.
Yeah.
It seems like all the 9As he's put time into, they all look very attractive in one way or the other. I would imagine that, like, whatever he ends up climbing is going to look really good.
Yeah, yeah, hopefully. And, you know, I wish him the best if he's ever listens to this. But, yeah, I think he, you know, he's got a lot of potential. I think he has just an eye for quality as well. Like, he isn't willing to put time into something seemingly that isn't very good, which, you know, it's cool and admirable trait to have, I think.
Yeah. I think from that, talking about good lines, I kind of want to talk about the Mello video from this week. I'm trying to remember what it... Diamante Grezzo? I've never spoken a word of Italian
Pearson
in my
line
life.
Thing. The James Pearson route thing or
yeah.
the boulder.
I don't think they listed a grade or anything for it.
This thing was interesting. Yeah, like, when this came up, I remember I was at the crag with my mates, and it took a minute for us to work out, like, what it actually was. I think this is very, very unique and very, very cool. I think it's, like, it's so unique, and it's so, like, it's very, very striking. I just think it almost looks photoshopped in, like, some of the images they put out about it. Yeah, I think it's really cool. The video itself, you know, fairly, like, unremarkable. I mean, he's just talking to Uber. I assume bolted it. And, yeah, the story about it's kind of cool, it being used in a quarry and whatnot. It's just, I think it's rare to get such uniform lines on boulders and climbing in general. And so to have, like, something that looks like it's just designed is quite interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think I, like, looked at the thumbnail and it was definitely like, wait, how the hell did The Rock, like, make that pattern? But... you know, then when you watch it, it's like, oh, this thing got, you know, blown off at some point. I feel like, you know, people will talk about, like, man-made climbs and whatever, and I'm generally, like, anti-chipping and anti-manufacturing. But I think, you know, when a climb is kind of the product of human intervention, but, like, not for the intent of climbing on it, I think, you know, that can be really cool. And I think this is definitely a case, like, the holds... you know, he's like pinching for basically every move, which isn't exactly something that happens on climbs very much. And it, you know, just like the way that The Rock turned out, he said, just like a pattern you're not going to find out in nature, but is also like very, you know, they talk in the video about like, oh, no one would ever think to climb that. But I definitely get the appeal.
I disagree.
Like, it looks sick.
Yeah, I think it's cool as like its own thing. I think that's it. But if... you know, we start going around blowing up mountainsides to, like, replicate this.
Right.
And I think, like, you know, it looks incredible, but, like, it is fundamentally just the same hold, like, you know, three dozen times. Like, the moves aren't particularly inspiring, although they are, like, you know, like, the way that the route's been bolted lends itself towards a certain beta. But I think it is cool, but... and I do think it's like so unique and like it's truly like a stunning boulder, and it got people not boulder route, and it did get people talking. I just you know, if it was everywhere there'd be a problem, but I just think for this, like, really, really cool. And I'm very surprised I've just never seen it before, if I'm honest.
Yeah, no, I definitely wouldn't want like a crag that looked like this, but as a one-off line, it's super cool.
Yeah, I think like quarried routes and stuff, though, like there are a lot of that exist. Like in North Wales in the UK, we have like the slate quarries, and you get like really into just like sheer, like vertical slate walls, which is something quite rare in nature, and you get stuff like that. So like quarried routes do exist, but to get something like this, like I'm just looking at a picture of it now, I'm trying to like in my head figure out how it like came off like that, and it's just like, I don't even know, but, like, fair play. Like, it is really cool.
Yeah, it's not really apparent how, like, you know, the rock that came off landed or anything like that. I'm sure if you're standing under it, you're like, oh, here's like all the talus that fell off. But, you know, it's not really obvious from looking at it. Yeah, I mean, I think I've heard of like crags in Greece that are like limestone crags or something that's like all quarried out. I'm sure there's a few in the US. There's kind of like some, there's an area in Alaska. I think there was a Climbing Magazine article about it one time as like the worst climbing area in the United States. That's just like, there's this cliff that runs along this kind of fjord that they had to build a highway along. So they just blasted out like, you know, 15 meters of rock or whatever. So there's just all these
Really?
exceptionally chaussee cliffs, but it's like 10 minutes from people's houses, so people climb on it anyways. Going back to it, it's like when it wasn't really done for the sake of climbing, it kind of ends up being cool, but maybe if it's done for the sake of climbing, it would lose some authenticity, maybe.
I think you'd like it's a risk going around blowing up bits of rock. There's a cave in the UK, Paracelsus Cave on one of the Orms, and the Victorians blew it up and just created this cave. And then in the 90s, Jerry Moffat went there and chipped, like drilled and chipped like a route through the middle of it. And now there's like loads of different boulder link-ups and stuff in that. And it generally doesn't lead itself to very good climbing, but I think just in this very rare case, it's led itself to very good climbing.
Yeah, maybe not advocating for blowing up rocks, but just it's like,
If
oh,
you have
this.
the capability to blow up a rock, though, like you're doing something quite right, I think. Maybe just don't do it for climbing's sake.
Yeah,
Yeah,
maybe you
should we
are.
talk about the Molly Thompson Smith video?
Yeah, let's hop on that one. Molly's Sheffield based, I think, right now, or at least was
Yeah,
when this
I
video
don't
happened.
know. I don't know her at all. I may have met her once, but yeah,
Yeah.
don't know her at all, really.
Yeah.
I think in the as the video talks about, she was very invested in the comp scene, which I don't really have much to do with. But as well, she's very, very capable outdoors. I think she's done a few AB pluses, and she's flashed 8A and stuff. And she's very impressive. But yeah, I really like this video. This like story of her recovery from, you know, a pretty harsh accident. And she's been injured a lot in her career. I know she had like a critically bad finger injury and stuff. And to see her like recovery and obviously like climaxing and her going to the Olympics was like super inspiring and really impressive. And she seemed just like, you know, dead keen for it. And the way she was talking about how, you know, she climbed at her best when she had no expectations, it's like really interesting and nice to see. And I think like just generally the whole video, she just comes across like really well in it and really, you know, really obviously quite inspiring video. And yeah, I really enjoyed it. I don't know if you've listened to the Careless Talk podcast she did just after the Olympics. It was quite interesting.
I think I might have, but that was definitely like a year ago at this point, so I don't know if I
Yeah.
remember anything. Yeah, I mean, to go like a year and a half from completely destroying your ankle to being at the Olympics is crazy, especially with how tight like the qualification timeline ended up looking.
Yeah.
That's super impressive. And yeah, I mean, I don't know if I followed her specifically. I mean, it's, you know, I've definitely been aware of her. She's definitely has a fairly large like social media presence and whatever. I don't know. There's like a classic traverse climb. I think somewhere in the peak, maybe that Ben or Jerry did, where you're like traversing on edges. And I think there's like a clip of Molly like locking off in a one arm and like making a peace sign and then doing a 360 campus or something. So obviously, very strong in general. I mean, you've got to be very strong to go to the Olympics.
She is like very good. She's done some of the really hard stuff on the schoolroom board. Like she did Milk It, which is probably like 8B plus. Like would be not probably harder than 8B plus outside. Really, really capable climber and very, you know, very good story, I think. Like really lovely video.
Yeah, and I mean, I feel like kind of the, or at least like the point of the video, you know, with its title being Life After Plastic, talking about like what does the career look like after she's done with comps and she was doing like trad climbing and stuff. And I think, feel like she's another one where it's like, you know, I'm psyched for whatever she ends up doing in the meantime, but it's also going to be really exciting when she, you know, kind of takes a step towards real rock, you know, digs into a project or something like that.
I mean, she seems keen for like outdoor bouldering. Like I know Alison Vest came up and they went to Wales and stuff. And there's so many like classic problems in this country that just haven't had a female repeat. And, you know, like Shauna previously being probably one of the few that's like capable of like the 8B and up stuff. And so it's cool that we have like this and another person that is like now retired from competition climbing and has the means to be able to go and, you know, do a lot of this, like really these really hard boulders in this country. And, you know, maybe further afield, we might see some ascents taken.
Yeah, definitely. I was going to say, like, the only woman I think of from the UK who's, like, kind of pulling that hard is Shauna. And obviously she's putting up, like, 8Bs whenever she wants to. But, you know, it's cool to see more women getting after it.
I think with Shauna, like, since she kind of retired from competition climbing, she seems to be just even more busy. Like, so much stuff. Like, she's, you know, working with the IFSC, does loads of stuff with Red Bull and whatnot. So I don't know if she has, like, the time to put into, you know, repeating these hard boulders. But she's our only, like 8B plus female climber at the moment. There's a few others. There's, like, Tara Hayes, like, Nathan Phillips's partner, who's done, you know, a couple 8Bs. But Molly's still, like, I think the second in the UK with... Yeah. Quite a few hard ascents. It is impressive, and you know, I do hope that she does graduate into doing some really hard stuff in Britain, and you know, like other hard boulders wherever. I think it'd be quite interesting.
Yeah, that seems kind of like the direction she's interested in going. Cool. I think the last thing we wanted to talk about, since we've got the local Sheffield connection on, I think we were going to talk about the real thing, which is like the classic. Bouldering Ben Moon, kind of like the first bouldering video ever.
Less of the first bouldering video ever, and more of the first one that was like professionally produced.
Sure, like not just like a camcorder that somebody like put directly to tape and distributed their friends. It was like, you know, it's edited and it's got a plot.
Yeah. I think when watching it now, like, firstly, I think Ben is slightly embarrassed for some of the stuff that he did in the video with, like, the in font where he's, like, rallying his car around and drifting in car parks. Yeah. But I think, to be fair, I don't know, though, because he has just bought a Porsche, so that's pretty cool. But it is interesting watching it now. Firstly, like, it's a very, like... climbing film kind of not made by a climber. The bit at the start with them like in the metalworks and stuff like is really weird, I guess. And then as well, like the shots of them driving to the crag are all like out of order. Like I essentially drove those roads today and there'll be like a shot where they're at one place and then they'll just be at another crag. It's quite strange. But yeah, it's an ultra classic, the real thing. Like the way that Jerry and Ben are in it, and of course like Ben doing Karma in it is really cool. And yeah, it's a brilliant, brilliant video. Just like one of the greats, I think. And I just the video of them in the schoolroom as well. Like I was there yesterday on that board. I think it's like a true inspiration for like a generation of climbers. And like I think like the Sheffield recruitment video of why you'd come and live here is because of that.
Mm-hmm. I feel like something that seems, at least from an outside perspective, like very like kind of maybe not iconic about the UK, but like maybe unique to the UK and Sheffield is like how much you guys are kind of like immersed in the history and the culture and like how important that is to you. Like obviously there's a lot of history to climbing areas everywhere, but it seems like it's kept very alive there. And this is kind of like a part of that, right? Where it's like, the schoolroom board and there's all these... What is the official name? Like the schoolroom, the board? I don't remember.
It's just called the school 50 generally, like 50, what's 52 degrees, but it's technically, but it's 50, like the school 50, I guess most people would call it. I think in the UK, we've like in Sheffield at least, we've had like this kind of happy accident of, well, it's probably not an accident to be fair, but this like fortunate position where like Ben has invested so much into Sheffield and British climbing with like Moon, and because he was like kind of had the resources to do so at the right time, like the like bringing out the Moon board and bringing out like small things like bouldering pads and kind of creating that brand and then reinvesting back into Sheffield has been like a very positive thing. And so that's why we've been able to like kind of preserve like the schoolroom board and the sort of like you know, like a lot of athletes throughout that, and like kind of have Sheffield as that sort of place to do so. And I think the same thing also happened with like the Climbing Works, just like a really old gym, and has hosted Quiff for years, which is like a big competition. It used to be a quite a bit bigger, but and I think it's just because they were so early to the trend, and the same with the Foundry actually, which is like the original climbing gym. I think it's one of the oldest climbing gyms in the world. I think because they were so early to the trend, it kind of like you now have like a generation of people that, you know, who used to climb at the, used to climb at these gyms when they were younger, and now have brought their kids who are into climbing, and it kind of has perpetuated itself. So many people in Sheffield just climb, even though they may not be invested in the climbing community itself.
Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. I don't know if this is accurate, but like cultural nepotism in that way, and not in like a bad way, but it's just like you've got this buy-in from past generations into the present ones, and keeping all that
Yeah,
alive.
definitely. I
Yeah.
think there's like very few places like in the world that could have the population of Sheffield and then have like five and like soon to be six different climbing gyms.
Oh, that's
And like
crazy.
some of them are like there's four gyms in Sheffield that are like a 15 minute walk from one another. Like it is like the density is like insane. Like
How many people
I
live in
think it's
Sheffield?
maybe just under a million.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, like a fairly big city, like that's more people than live
Five
in my
or half
entire
a million.
state, but
Yeah, 500,000 people. But yeah, like a relatively small amount of people. Like I just think like the facilities we have are so good here.
yeah, no, that's kind of insane to me. No, I think like looking at this video, it's like, you know, it's a little bit apparent that it's like, you know, it's the OG like edited climbing film, right? It's very, very 90s. Like I was not
Yeah.
expecting to hear, you know, Ben Moon's voice come out of the mouth of one of the Backstreet Boys.
Yeah. It is. I think it's weird watching because it's, like, it is a climbing film inherently made by like non-climbers. Like it's very like, and like the voiceover and stuff on it is like the way they're describing it to you is like you're watching it as a non-climber, and it's quite interesting because I think like it's kind of a little bit cheesy, and it's like it's very sort of like a product of its time. But I think that's kind of why it's so good. Because it's like it's just like a piece of history, and it's so like iconic. Like the amount of times it's quoted and you know replicated is like it's such like a classic. I think it's like it's probably one of the few climbing films that's genuinely just like an all-time classic.
Yeah, you know, this was my first time ever watching it, which is, you know, kind of embarrassing for me, I guess. But, you know, they're not really trying to do anything, which kind of makes it more authentic, right? They're not like
Yeah.
trying to make a skate film or whatever. They're just like, well, no one's ever really told a story like this about bouldering before, so we're just gonna try
Yeah.
and do it.
I think as well, like one of the reasons I really enjoy it is I think the best climbing films are the ones that don't really focus on the climbing. It's more so the personality. Like the first 30 minutes inherently are the real thing. It's like, oh, Jerry's the, you know, the one who, you know, he's got a bit of an ego, and he's just like he pretends not to care that much, and Ben's like the more serious and focused one. And it's essentially the first part of the film is just them like pissing about really. And I think that like really gets you invested in the characters of the film. Like no other form of media are you just like put straight into somebody doing something. It's more like, oh, here's the character, let's explain why you should care about this character. And that's why I think the really good is because it dishes out the characters, it really gets you invested, it's quite funny, and then it's like a bit of climbing on top.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I feel like that's kind of an observation I have about a lot of, you know, more modern stuff, as like climbing videos have gotten shorter and shorter over the years, right? There's not so many like feature length things like this anymore relative to like 5 to 10 minute climbing videos. And you can't really get
Yeah.
invested in the people like that. And I feel like personally, I kind of have a taste for films where it's like, you know, it's not just about one boulder. It's like people are doing, you know, 5 or 10 problems over the course of it, just because it's like, yeah, then it's like you get to appreciate these lines, but you can only care about a boulder for so long through like a screen. But, you know, when it becomes about the person and they're just climbing a bunch of cool things, then you can kind of get a more interesting story like that. And then towards the end,
Yeah.
somebody does like I don't remember the name of the boulder, but there's like an 8-8 plus that looks really cool.
Karma.
No, I'm talking about before that, I think. But then
Oh,
they
I
also
don't
go
know.
and do Karma, and that's super cool, especially to see like an ascent of Karma from like almost 30 years ago. And there's
Yeah.
like a schoolroom 8-8 plus as well. So like getting some of that like really sick, really inspiring, really hard climbing in there as well is cool to see.
Yeah. I think it's a real shame that, I think you put it well, with that 5 to 10, you don't really get the characters, over so well. I think it, like, it's, I, like, when I think about it now, the people that are at the forefront of climbing, aside from a few odds and ends, I don't really know what the personalities are really like. I think back to, watching, the old Island and Dosage volumes, where, I know in my head, I have, this image of what Dave Graham's personality is like, and I know what Daniel's like, and, Gnarly's like, because you got those kind of videos where it'd just be, them talking on the train or in the car, and then, obviously just, a montage of them climbing. But, with the current trend of, hyper-edited videos and, sort of removing the character to it, it's more of a focus on the climbing and the rock, you kind of remove that element, which I think is a bit of a shame.
Yeah, no. I watched I hadn't watched Sudan Soul until very recently, and I watched that, and that's a longer one too. Like it's a 50-something minute film as well, and he's only working one boulder for the course of it. But I think over half the film is like not at the boulder. It's like focusing on him and like his relationships and like his process and who he is, and that's really cool to see.
Yeah.
And maybe like kind of the modern, interpretation of like the long climbing film, as much as you or I might feel about this, is like pro climbers doing like vlogging content, which maybe
Yeah,
isn't my
yeah.
favorite, but it's definitely like a way to like kind of interact with their character, I guess.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. I think it is interesting, and I think, it would be nice to get some more personalized. I think the misconception is that in order to make a good climbing film, you have to be good at climbing, which I don't think you have to be. If you're funny and you're interesting and you shoot something well and just climb some cool looking bits of rock, people will pay attention. There are some classic climbing films that I really enjoy watching. A lot of the stuff from Chris Doyle, which is to be fair, quite hard, some of it, but a lot of it is just, it's so good because it's more so focusing on the characters as opposed to the climbing itself.
Like, I don't know if you ever watch Badwater Bouldering, but they produce like a video every week or two, and they do like climb out a boulder, and they'll do a bunch of stuff between like somewhere between like V3 and V10.
Right.
And I feel like that's cool to just like, it's people who are obviously just psyched on climbing and like want to make content, and then you when they are able to make a bunch because it's not like a super overproduced thing or whatever, you can just be like, oh, these people are doing something cool. I feel
Yeah.
like, kind of another thing that springs to mind is like Kai Whaley. He was doing like a bunch of videos maybe like last year, just like talking because he was projecting both the 9As out in Vegas.
Yeah. No, I did enjoy watching this.
I was in Vegas last winter. I got to watch him do a session on Return. And yeah, he seems like a genuine guy. It was fun to kind of watch that play out in person. And it seemed like a good way of like kind of getting that angle on a climbing personality, just to have your weekly 10-minute Kai Whaley injection or whatever.
It's interesting. His dad is a Brit that moved to America,
Oh, really?
and Moon was friends with him, and that's why him and his brother are both, well, I think him at least is sponsored by Moon because Moon knows his dad.
That's funny. Yeah, I did. I mean,
Yeah.
obviously he's like a very strong climber and a very strong board climber, but I didn't know that connection. Yeah, I mean, he and his
No,
brother
no.
are like, his brother just did Sosa. I think he's also done
Yeah.
like at least one more V16, probably a couple more.
Grand Illusion, I think.
Yeah, the sibling duos. Cool. Yeah,
Cool.
thanks for hopping on with me. I appreciate it.
No worries. Yeah, no worries. It was nice to speak to you.
Yeah, you host the Backseat Climbing podcast.
Yes, with Mr. Solly KD. Yeah, he's kayaking at the moment, so we've got a bit of downtime, but we should be making more episodes soon.
Personally, my favorite climbing podcast out there right now. I enjoy a good bit
Yeah.
of taking the piss, as it were.
Yeah.
And I feel
Rest in peace,
like,
climbing is neither.
yeah, I think you're just releasing on Spotify at the moment.
We do YouTube and one other one, but you have to half pay for Apple Podcasts, so maybe we'll sort that out at some point. But
Yeah, I've
yeah.
noticed that as well. You have to like create a whole new account or something, and it's yeah, kind of a
Yeah, it's
hassle.
annoying.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, thank you,
Cool.
Matt. I appreciate your
No
time.
worries.
Yeah.
Yes. No, have a good one.
Yeah, you as well.
Cheers.